Welcome back to the program. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS. Well, it's like something out of a James Bond movie. An Iranian nuclear scientist assassinated by a magnetic bomb attached to his car by passing motorcyclists. But what are the real-world implications of this incident? And with the world concerned about a nuclear-armed Iran, is this kind of a tactic a reasonable one? To talk about it, I'm joined by Wall Street Journal reporter Farnaz Fasihi. She has written many articles about Iran, including a recent one about this assassination. Farnaz, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about this. This is not the first Iranian nuclear scientist that has been assassinated. How did this particular incident unfold?
This is the fifth Iranian nuclear scientist that has been assassinated in just 2 years. And the pattern is more or less the same, like you said, like a James Bond movie. These scientists are often assassinated on their way to work in the morning rush hour in Tehran with motorcycles approaching their car and sticking a magnetic bomb on the passenger door. The bombs are very sophisticated because they don't really take out anybody in the area. I mean, they're sophisticated explosives that really just take out the target.
Now, Iran's top cleric has now blamed the CIA and Israel's Mossad for this attack. Although, has there been any clear evidence linking these attacks to the U.S. and Israel?
There have not been any evidence that we know of, although I have to say that both intelligence sources in Washington and in the Middle East and American diplomats that we speak to say that the most likely scenario here is that that Israel is behind these attacks. I mean, I know that Iran has this conspiracy theory that it's the U.S. and Israel, but Israel has not denied that it's involved and has not confirmed it, and I think they're deliberately keeping an air of ambiguity about this, and they do have a history of political assassinations in the Middle East, so whoever is behind them, they seem to be very well trained. It's extremely well organized, and it's very sophisticated, so it's definitely not amateurs.
Now, you yourself based out of Beirut, and you are there right now. What is the reaction in the Arab world to this most recent assassination? Are people outraged?
Yes, people are outraged, although I have to say the Arab world is roiling now with its own problems, and a lot of the Arab governments certainly are very worried about the prospect of a nuclear Islamic Republic of Iran. So although they might not say it, but I think most Arab leaders would like the nuclear program in Iran to somehow be either stopped or set back. But the regular people are not very happy. You know, there is anti-American, anti-Israeli sentiment here. And when these sort of things happen, they tend to have a counterproductive effect. The stated policy of Washington is to negotiate with Iran over its nuclear program. But these sort of events, tend to damage the mutual trust, if the little trust that there is, and I think move things closer to a confrontation rather than negotiations.
And now, you've covered Iran for a while, all the different developments. There are all kinds of situations occurring, including a potential conflict in the Strait of Hormuz. When it comes to the mullahs of Iran, how crazy are they in terms of pursuing a nuclear weapon and maybe actually launching one towards Israel?
They're not crazy. Their policies are very calculated, and at the heart of them is the regime's own survival. I think that for most Iran watchers, and for myself included, the wisdom seems to be that even if they are pursuing a nuclear weapons program, and we don't know that yet, maybe they just want to have the capability but not actually produce a weapon, it's mainly for survival. Iran, the regime in Iran is marginalized. marginalized in the world. It's isolated internationally. It's not very liked by its Arab neighbors. It's facing tremendous amount of dissent at home with a population that is 65% under the age of 30, and they do not want this regime. So they, you know, they look around and they see that with Saddam Hussein, he didn't have nuclear power and it was easy to take him out. With North Korea, because of the nuclear weapons, they, you know, the regime has stayed in power. So I think it's more a question of survival for the clerical regime and for the establishment, rather than really wanting to take out Israel, because I think they know that if they do fire anything, Iran will be wiped off. So they're not suicidal.
I'm talking to Wall Street Journal reporter Farnaz Fasihi. She has written an article about the recent assassination of a nuclear scientist in Iran. Now, Farnaz, in terms of the timeline, is it clear when they could potentially have a nuclear weapon in place?
No, I don't think it's clear. I think that even the latest report by the International Atomic and Energy Agency, which is the UN watchguard for nuclear weapons in the world, even their latest report about 2 months ago said that Iran has conducted some secret research that could potentially be for a military program. But they did not come out and say that Iran does have a military program or that it was about to get the bomb. And I think that, you know, there has not been any proof that Iran is actually pursuing a military program. Some analysts say that it's maybe 2 years away, 3 years away for them to have the potential to make a bomb if they choose to do that.
But what about Iran's hostile posture in their involvement in Iraq? They're supporting Hezbollah in Lebanon. Right. These types of actions are clearly not defensive ones. How can this be viewed as anything other than aggression?
You know, this has been their sort of regional policy from the very beginning in terms of creating proxy groups like Hezbollah here, like the some of the Shia militant groups, like the one, the Mahdi Army in Iraq, loyal to Muqtada Sadr in Afghanistan, and even Hamas. It's been their policy to fund these groups, arm them, and have allies for themselves so they could use them as leverage around the Middle East. You know, they could always say, well, if negotiations don't go this way or that way, you know, Iran is powerful, we have allies, we have proxy militants, and we could create problems. And a number of officials have actually openly said that. They have said that if the U.S. strikes Iran, we will take out their soldiers and American generals in Afghanistan and Iraq. They've openly you know, warned the U.S. that they would strike back.
I have to ask you one more question. Syria, right next door to where you are, right. The approach the government there has taken to maintain its power, a very brutal reaction to its population, is that kind of a model perhaps for other regimes to follow if they're confronted and ultimately to do almost anything to remain in place?
I think that Syria is following Iran's model. I think Iran, after the 2009 uprising and the mass arrest that they had and the killings and, you know, the widespread crackdowns on the opposition, including, you know, internet spying and torture and rape in prison, it's become a model for Syria. I think Syria has learned from Iran, and they're trying to keep their grip on power by creating fear. But I have to say, you know, day by day, it increasingly looks like the Syrian regime is losing its grip and that it's in real trouble and that the people are not going to give up.
Well, we will see what 2012 brings to the entire region. Farnaz Fasihi, Wall Street Journal reporter, talking to me from Beirut. Farnaz, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we'll be right back. But first, send us some feedback. Email address here is capitalcityrecap@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you. Let me know what you think. Coming up next, he's 84 years old. He's a billionaire. He owns the Ambassador Bridge, and he is in jail tonight. We'll talk about how Matty Maroon ended up behind bars. That's next. I'm Michael Cohen, and this is 1320 WILS.